Well, hey, everybody, and welcome to another edition of The Journey of Hope. Glad you could be with us today. The Journey of Hope is a podcast that's especially designed to address the issues that men and women face after incarceration. John Vespasian is our guest today, a returning guest, and he's calling in from the Netherlands to talk about his new book. He's got great advice about getting past adversity. We've talked to John over the years about this, and he returns today to discuss his new book. We'll be right back with John right after this. I'm Rodney Mathers, and you're on The Journey of Hope. My email address is MATHERSRODNEY at yahoo.com. MathersRodney at yahoo.com. Would love to hear from you. Well, hey, everybody, and welcome back. My guest today is John Vespasian. John has written numerous books about rational living. His latest is Undisrupted, How Highly Effective People Deal with Disruptions. John, welcome back.
Hi, Rodney. Thanks for having me on.
Now, you are calling from Europe. You didn't tell me exactly. Where are you in Europe right now?
I am the Netherlands. I'm close to Amsterdam, so just on the other side of the ocean.
Beautiful. Man, I've always wanted to go there. I wonder if I'll ever get to go there. I don't know. Anyway, I understand it's beautiful there. Is that right?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Okay, John. What's a disruption? Tell me what a disruption is.
Well, disruption, as I take in the book, I take in the wide sense. From people who almost get killed because they get into trouble, in different kinds of trouble, of accidents, to disruptions in your career, disruptions in terms of health, people who become severely sick. So I have a very wide approach in the book. I examine different types of disruptions in different centuries, different professions, different setups, to try to come up with the patterns of people who become extremely effective at dealing with disruptions. In many cases, people come over on the other side. They come stronger than they were at the beginning. And also to show the patterns of people who really collapse when they have to face severe problems. Even people who are very intelligent, highly educated, people who have traveled, who speak several languages, sometimes I present many examples in the book. People collapse completely. They destroy their lives. They begin to make mistake after mistake. So the whole point of the book is to show the patterns of behavior and the patterns of thinking that can help people deal better with disruptions.
And so we're talking about the kinds of adversities in modern life, like divorce, a death in the family. So that's the kind of thing you're talking about, something that happens in a career, which might knock a career off track. And so what you're talking about in the book is how to effectively address those life situations so we come out okay on the other side. Am I right about that?
Yes, in a way, sense. Let me just tell you a little story. And this is the biography that gave me the idea for the book. And I was reading, that was 2 years ago, I was reading the biography of Salvo Mamontov. He was a very famous Russian industrialist in the 19th century. He's the Russian equivalent of Andrew Carnegie. And okay. Mamontov was building railroads in Russia. He was very successful, very intelligent, highly educated. When he was in his 40s, he made a few mistakes and basically he destroyed his life. Because when he was at the top of his career, he was a celebrity, he had a huge art collection. He got the idea of starting a new business. He was running railroads. So he got the idea of starting a steel manufacturing business. And he started to lose money in huge amounts. He didn't know anything about it, but he was very self-confident. As it happens to many people today, they are so ridiculously self-confident in areas they know nothing about. So my mother started to lose money. Instead of giving up, which would be the rational reaction, say, okay, I made a mistake. I just deal with it. I continue with my life. He doubled down. And this is the fundamental pattern you see in the book. People who really destroy their lives, they double down on their mistakes. They start to get disruptions, and instead of using intelligent strategies, workable strategies, they double down their mistakes. They feel ridiculously self-confident, and where there's nothing behind. And what Mamontov did was basically to use the cash flow from his profitable business to pay for the losses in his steel manufacturing. And very soon, the shareholders and the bondholders, they realized that he was taking money from their company because they have shareholders, he has shareholders, and they sued him. He was prosecuted. The trial was on the first page of the newspapers the whole year. Eventually, he lost everything. He lost his businesses. He lost his savings. He lost his house. He lost his art collection. He was destitute. And for the last 13 years of his life, he lived in total misery. He didn't go to jail eventually because he was accused. The general attorney was asking for, the prosecutor was asking for 10 years of jail. Eventually, he didn't go to jail. It was a miracle he didn't go to jail. But his life was destroyed. And the pattern you see in Mamontov, I was very intrigued by the story because this guy was not a stupid guy. I mean, he had been to universities in Paris. He spoke several languages. He was a very sophisticated business executive, and basically he destroyed his life.
Right.
So the pattern of doubling down your mistakes, to refuse to acknowledge that you made a mistake, this is the fundamental characteristic you see in people who destroy their lives.
It's interesting because I think that there's like this dichotomy where you have this feeling of self-actualization. I mean, doesn't someone who rises to that level of success have to have, you know, this incredibly huge amount of confidence within themselves, righteously or not, and then that in the end, his inability to step away from his ego, his pride, that in the end, that thing that got him there is also what destroyed him. That's what I see. Am I wrong about that?
Yes, some people have the ability to remain modest when they are successful, but this is very rare. We go through the different examples in the book, different stories. You will see that it is a human weakness. When you become successful and when you are just lucky, because some people are just lucky and they are doing well, they have a job, nothing really happens, but they're doing well, and they cannot imagine themselves failing. They become sometimes extremely arrogant, and you see this very often in famous movie stars, sports players, and after a while, when they become wealthy, they start to make horrible investments It's not the first time you read the newspapers, a famous basketball player or rugby player or that invests his money in stupid investments and he loses everything he's accumulated his whole life. And this pattern, you see it not only in the 20th century, you see it in every century.
Wow.
Arrogance.
Interesting.
The inability to recognize that you don't know everything. You know, maybe you are very good in some area. Like Mamontov was very good at running railroads, but he didn't know the first thing about steel manufacturing. It's a completely different business, and it's very dangerous to allow this self-confidence, which can be healthy, but it's very dangerous to think yourself knowing everything on every area, and this is what destroys people and what destroys organizations.
I'm just going to throw this out there, and then we'll talk more specifically about some specific types of disruptions, like jail, for example. But do you think that there's a president in the United States that falls into this category of, you know, the ego is just a bit much, and he can't climb down from it? Do you see that in Trump? I do.
Well, I think to a certain extent, this is a characteristic of everyone who runs for public office. You have to have a very, very thick skin to run for any kind of public office, to run, to do debates, to be a representative. And yeah, in some cases, I mean, you see the same in Europe. It's a pattern you see in many countries. Maybe you're not so familiar with Italian politics or with British politics, but you see the same patterns. If you are a performer, you're an actor and you're doing theater, or you are a pop artist and you're doing performances, you need a very hard skin, because whatever you do, especially at the beginning, you're going to be criticized. People are not even I'm going to ignore you systematically while you're trying to make a name for yourself. So I think it goes with the territory.
It does.
The important thing is to realize, to get good advisors, because when you are taking decisions that affect millions of people, you have to be very careful. You have to really get good advice, because you could not just destroy yourself. You could destroy the lives of many people.
Yeah, and I think that, like with Boris Johnson, you can see very similar Trump-like behaviors in him, and it's this whole wave of nationalism, but that's a whole different discussion. Let's get back to your book, and let's talk about this word disruption. And for my audience in particular, let's talk about how to address something like a period of incarceration, bouncing back after that kind of disruption. John, what would you have to say to our audience about that? I mean, how do you do that?
Yeah, let me just answer with a story.
Okay.
From the book and the consequences. One of the principles that I think is well established to deal with disruptions is that you have to try to use them to grow. And I think it's easier said than done, but the main principle you see in the book for dealing with disruptions was discovered by Vladimir Kovalevsky. He was a paleontologist in the 19th century. And the story is very interesting because he established a bit by chance, because he was not looking he was not looking for a principle of personal development, because he was researching prehistoric animals. And in the 19th century, people did not know how the small horses you find in museums in the U.S., horses very small, the size of a cat or a dog, how they actually became through the centuries and centuries, how they became as big as they are today, because now a horse is really quite a big and strong animal. Mm-hmm. And until Kovalevsky, people thought they were different species, that it's not possible that someone, an animal that is very small and very weak, became so big and so strong and so fast. And Kovalevsky traveled to the U.S. To research the fossils because, okay, as you might know, horses started as a species started in the U.S. and then they went through Argentina, they went to Asia, because at that time The land was in one go. You could just actually walk from the U.S. to China. And through generations, Kovalevsky realized that what made a small horses very big was disruption. At a certain point, they could not eat blades anymore because the trees were growing very high. So they have to go outside. They have to go into the prairie, and they have to run from predators. And generation after generation, they became very strong. And what made them strong, Kovalevsky realized, is not a chance. It is disruption. They have to face very severe problems for survival. And generation after generation, the horses that actually adapted better to disruptions, they had more children, and then they created bigger animals. So when you go to jail, or when you are severely sick, or you have bad luck because you could go bankrupt in a business and lose everything you have in your life, and this is very, very painful, you have to understand that the only way is forward. If you are paralyzed by the event and say, okay, I'm going to spend 5 years in jail or 10 years in jail, there is nothing I can do, how can I use it as best as possible? And when people accept that there is no going back, eventually you will be released. Maybe you can get earlier release if you get some kind of advantage in jail. But still, try to use the time as well as you can to develop yourself physically. And most people do that in jail. They become very strong because they do a lot of sports, a lot of exercise. And try to learn. If you have access to a library, my God, many people in jail, they take a law degree, or they at least they learn some profession, or they learn something, they learn some skills, so that by the time they go back and they are released, they hit the ground running. They hit the ground running, and they can easily develop a better profession. They can make new friends. They become better persons. What is very easy and very dangerous is that when you get into these kind of problems, you become very bitter. And then you see yourself possibly sometimes with reason, but you see yourself as someone who is damaged permanently, and you can never reconnect with society. This is not correct. And in the book, I present many examples of people who have gone through horrible, horrible disruptions in their lives, and they have been able to reconnect because they realize that the only way is forward. And they have to use their time productively as much as they can. When they are released, when they're able to get back on their feet, try to make the best of their possibilities. And every minute counts, every hour counts. We can go through some of the stories in the book, and I can show you people who had terrible accidents and people who were facing major problems, how they actually turned their lives around.
Let's take one quick one. Can you do one quick one for us and show us a really nice example, a true life example of someone overcoming some horrible adversity? Can you give us an example of that from the book?
Let me just give you one of my favorite stories. And it's the story of a guitar player. His name was Django Reinhardt. He was very famous in the 1950s, 1940s. And Reinhardt, I mean, he didn't go to school because his family was very poor. He was from a gypsy family, so they were traveling all the time. And his only ambition for the future was to become a musician, to become a guitar player, because for gypsies, traditionally in Europe, they used to make money playing music on the public square. So by the time he was 20, Reinhardt was already quite a good guitar player. And then he had a very severe accident. He was living in a van, and at that time they didn't have electricity. We are talking about the 1930s. So they used candles for lighting. And during the night, a candle was overturned, and the van was on fire. And by the time that Reinhardt woke up, he was surrounded by fire. He couldn't get out. So by the time he managed to go through the fire, he burned half of his body very, very severely, and he lost one of his fingers. So basically destroyed his skills, because without a finger, one of the fingers, you cannot really play guitar. So So he was crushed. He thought that he would be poor the rest of his life. He had lost his dreams. But, and here's one of the main principles of the book, when you're facing this kind of major problems and your health, your freedom, your finances, they are completely destroyed, you have to try to use the approach that Reinhardt took, and he's very clever. Because at the beginning, he was very depressed. For a few months, he was crushed. He would not get out of bed. He was, basically, his whole life was destroyed because he could not play guitar. He didn't have any skills. He had no schooling. It was a disaster. But here comes the interesting part. At a certain point, he realized that he might find some kind of trick or some kind of solution. If he looked into history to people who have gone through similar problems, because it's not the first time in history that people have been severely injured, musicians, artists, and he looked into history, and he found that some people in history, they are able to play music even if they had severe physical deficiencies. So he thought about it, thought about it, maybe I could play guitar with nine fingers. And he didn't know how to do it. He tried different ways, and in the end, he came up with a solution. Maybe I could play faster. He started to play guitar very fast so that he could actually make up for the loss of one finger. And within a year, he had developed a unique style, playing gypsy music together with jazz music. He made a record. He sold a huge amount of copies in France. And then he became very famous within a few years because his way of playing guitar, as a result of the accident, was unique. And when you listen to a recording, a guitar recording from Reinhardt, you see that his style was unique. There's actually a movie by Woody Allen about Reinhardt when he was in the U.S. because he was an amazing player. Mm-hmm. And the principle is something you can use in your life, whether you go to jail, whether you go bankrupt. Try to find real examples in history, and this is very easy to do nowadays with the internet. Try to find real examples of in history people who have gone through similar problems, and see how they did it, how they actually turned their lives around. Because this will give you real inspiration, real motivation to do something useful, something productive, something positive with your life. It's very difficult sometimes to get over depression because the first shock after having an accident or after going to jail is very, very hard. But after a while, you can start rebuilding your life. Look for good examples in history, like Reinhardt did. If you find just one example that is similar to yours, you will be easily motivated and you will be able to rebuild your life day by day. And eventually, you can be very successful.
John, excellent advice, as always. The new book is called Undisrupted, How Highly Effective People Deal with Disruptions. Undisrupted, How Highly Effective People Deal with Disruptions. John, thank you so much for calling in today.
Many thanks, Rodney. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
We're going to take another quick break, and we'll be right back after this. I'm Rodney Mathers, and you're on the Journey of Hope. To like a country music mix. Ain't got a living no sticks. To like country. To like country. Well, I don't care much for cows and such. Line dancing looks like it really sucks, and I don't own a gun or want to freeze hunting deer. Can't stand the taste of that damn Lone Star beer, but I live in the city. It's where I belong. Hey there, do you know someone who would be a good guest on this podcast? If you do, or you've got an idea for a topic, just drop me a line. I'd love to hear from you. Mathers Rodney at yahoo.com, MATHERS RODNEY at yahoo.com. Ain't gotta live in no sticks to like country. And I want to thank my special guest today, John Vespasian, calling in from the Netherlands. He's been on the show before. He's always got great stuff, and I encourage you to go check out his website. Until next time, remember that if God is for you, who can be against you? And we'll see you right here next time around on the Journey of Hope.